listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
In the past 2 weeks, Michael Brown was shot and killed by police in Ferguson, Missouri. And America's favorite comic, Robin Williams, committed suicide. Two high-profile deaths in a society that has learned not to look very closely at death. My guest today, Giselle Suarez, believes it's high time we look death in the face and get to know death. Death has great value for the lives we live, she says, and more importantly, every one of us will know death sometime in our lives. Not getting to know death is sort of like going to a great party and refusing to say hello to one of the hosts. So death and the death monologues is the focus of today's show with the author and actor of the death monologues, Giselle Suarez. So welcome to Full Power Living, where we bring you a wide variety of guests and programs with the aim of understanding the power and importance of human emotions. We broadcast over blogtalkradio.com, FPL, and emotionalpro.com, and distribute through iTunes. This particular program has been pre-recorded, so we will not be on our chats as usual for this show. Giselle Suarez graduated from the Theater Academy in Utrecht and spent over a decade playing, directing, and teaching in the European professional theater circuit. In 2009, she returned home to be with her mother, who had been diagnosed with a very malignant brain tumor. For 9 months, she assisted her on her death journey, and she says it's an experience that changed her life drastically. In addition to being transformed, Giselle Suarez was able to receive one of the greatest gifts in life, the miracle of death. It brought her to bring the two loves of her life, death and theater, together by writing and performing the death monologues. You can find her on the web at deathmonologues.com. So, Giselle Suarez, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen.
Okay, so let's hit the big question right from the beginning. Why do you want to talk to people about death?
Well, it's something that when it shows up, and it always shows up, it can be so tragic, and it just kind of stirs things up to a point where, you know, sometimes it's hard to go on, you know, if you've lost a loved one. That's one side of it. The other side of it is that when we do confront death and when we welcome it, when we embrace it, when we allow it to be part of our lives by talking about it, by looking at it, by, you know, however we approach it, it really has a way of, you know, getting to the essence of what's important in life. It kind of has a way of clearing all the BS out, because, you know, if you've ever been around somebody that's dying or when death shows up, it's like there's nothing around that isn't real, that's right, you know, right at the core of what's important in life. And sometimes losing that or, you know, witnessing somebody lose that is what reminds us of that. So therefore, when we are present with death, we really recognize how valuable each moment is. It allows us to be present. It has taught me so much in so many ways of, for example, with my child, you know, like being a parent, like certain reactions to, you know, are coming from this place of programming or fears about the future. And because I'm working so closely with death, what automatically pops into my head is, if you were going to die tonight, or if your son was going to die tonight, how would you respond in this moment? And what it does is, like, it makes you real with what's present. And usually it's going to that loving place and, you know, dropping all the roles or the, you know, the whatever is the mind trips, you know, and it's like, oh my God, I'm going to just give him a hug rather than going into this battle with him or something like that. And it just kind of drops everything and puts you right with what's real and what's important in that moment. And, you know, and the same thing goes for, like, daily life. If I knew I was going to die at the end of the week or at the end of this year, would I still be spending this day doing what I'm going to do, you know? So, because you never know. The truth is, you never know, you know. Every day could be your last day. And if you can lie down every night when you go to sleep and say, if I don't wake up tomorrow, would that be okay, you know? And if of course, you know, you still have stuff you want to do and your plans and dreams and all that, but, you know, if I don't wake up tomorrow, is my life in a place where I'm okay to go? And if it's not and you wake up the next day, hey, you get another chance, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, I've really noticed that as time has moved on. I'm now at the age of 71, and I think it was around 40 or 50, somewhere in there, where I began to notice that when you're young, you have this idea that life is going on forever, mm-hmm. and you've got plenty of time. And then you hit 45 or 50, and I started saying to myself, you know, it's not going to be as long as it used to be, and I need to really pay attention to what it is that I'm doing in my life so that I am sure that I live the life that I want to live and don't miss it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, for me, I mean, I'm 43. So it wasn't so present at all. In fact, one of the monologues that I wrote is my mom's death story, because that's what really opened this world up for me in a way that I didn't expect, and I wasn't really happy about it. You know, this whole journey was very challenging, and what came out of it is this appreciation for death and befriending it and courting it almost, or I felt it was courting me, you know, to personify death, because once my mom died and I had that experience, every moment was filled with thoughts of death and, like, busy with it, because what happened is there was this liberating gift witnessing her death, and some miraculous things happened, like stuff that you're like, that's a miracle. There's no way that, you know, that can be logically explained and all that. And I could share one of those stories in a moment.
Yeah.
Well, for example, like witnessing and going through this transformation, that monologue starts with, I never thought about it, ever. And if someone were to ask me then, what do I think about it? I probably would have said that death is failure or really bad luck. But death came knocking, and it was about to take me on a ride, and I had no choice in the matter. And it was literally taking me through this journey. And, like, one of the things that was happening with my mom is, you know, I'm a healer too, and I do readings and stuff. So I was working with stones and, like, energy work and everything. And it felt, like, so useless, because in the midst of this system where it's like what's important is the, you know, the MRIs and the surgeries and whatever the doctor says is like God's word. And so everything I was doing was like, first of all, I almost had to hide it because the people around me weren't very open or supportive about it. And then I would put certain things, like put this healing rose quartz bracelet on her arm, and my brother would take it off because it was like cutting her circulation, which it wasn't, but it was like, come on, it's a little rose quartz bracelet. And that was like, no, take it off. And yeah, it was crazy stuff like that. I kept going in, like, with her diet, trying to bring in, you know, like stuff that's healthy and full of life rather than the food that was served at the nursing home, because she had to be in a nursing home her last like 3 months because we couldn't take care of her at home. She couldn't really get out of bed anymore. Anyway, so I'm sitting there reading this book next to her bed, and you know, I'm really in this hopeless place. I'm starting to even doubt what I'm doing and if it means anything, and, you know, like all this kind of thing. And she reaches her arm back and starts turning the pages of my book, and she couldn't see it. I was completely out of her sight line. And she starts turning the pages one by one, and I'm just letting her do this. And suddenly she stops on this one page. And she couldn't see the page, and she starts tapping on it determinedly. And I kid you not, there was one sentence on that page. It was the end of the chapter, and it said, to assist a parent on his or her final crossing is the greatest gift you can give to the person who brought you into this world. And I just was mind-blowing. I'm like, that, I mean, it meant so much. It was like her way of thanking me, but also of saying, you know, like, this stuff does matter, and, you know, it's all part of this final scene that she's, you know, the last scene of a person's life is their death, you know. And to be present in that and to see your role in it, no matter what that is, whether it's, you know, the doctor or the child next to the parent or even the one who causes the death, you know, like if you're in a car accident or something. I mean, every person has a role in that scene. And this goes for life as well, but what happens with the final scene, it's the end of our movie. It's the most spectacular part of the life because it's where it ends, as far as on this dimension. I mean, I don't make any claims about the afterlife or anything like that. I'm just talking about the end of the story in this form. And people refuse to look at it. They refuse to talk about it. They you know, look away if it's ugly and if it's, you know, scary, or they grieve it, and there's nothing wrong with grieving. And there is no right or wrong way of grieving either. That's the other thing. Like, you know, we're so unable to be with death in our culture because other cultures are not the same. I mean, there's a culture in Indonesia that their whole life is about death, you know, and they have, like, every time somebody in the village dies, they have a parade that goes on for days. So there's always death around because somebody's always dying. So there's this ceremony and celebration about it that's coupled with the grieving and all that, you know. But we in this culture, we don't look at it, we don't talk about it. So what happened to me, and I felt like it was part of why I made this work. I needed to go what I went through to and able to create this work because it's a unique way of talking about it. First of all, it's entertaining, so people will engage. And then second of all, there's what's coming through is so much bigger than just the theater show, you know. So my mother died on the day that our son turned 1 year old. And I witnessed this from going to resisting to, you know, so I'm going to save her with my healing and my practices and to accepting and hearing the message that death was talking to me through her, you know, and then accepting it and seeing what a gift it can be. And then what the interesting thing that happened is that when she died yeah, on the birthday of my son, and then I came obsessed with the fear of my son dying. I mean, it was like totally unnatural. Every parent, I'm sure, has this fear, like, you know, the worries for the children, but this was like completely suffocating thing that was happening all the time. And I kind of went like, I can't live like this. So either you take me now or you take death, you know, you take him now and let me deal with that, you know. But what happened is I was taking on, you know, on a deeper journey, as I say, deeper down the rabbit hole by death, to discover more and more about what it means. And in the end, it was realizing that, and this is also in the show, I mean, this is, I can't even, it's like in my cells, the truth of this, you know, which is why I can stand on that stage and deliver this, because it's not easy to give that message, you know. We're all born with our death already woven into our lives. That's also a line, you know, your death is woven into the fabric of your life. When you grow up in a culture that fears me, that denies me, that hides me, that curses me, well, your death gets erased. It gets woven out of the fabric of your life, leaving you less than whole. Now tell me, how can you be alive, really alive, if you're not whole? And coming back to that, bringing that in and realizing it's already there. It's already part of it, you know, part of your destiny. So I started to relax. Like, if it's my son's destiny to die at 5 years old, I mean, I hope to God it's not, but if it is, there's a peace in knowing that there's the peace that there's nothing that I could do to change that. So there's nothing, I'm not causing it, it's already there, you know what I mean? So there's this relaxation that and trust. I'm not saying how I would react if that would happen, you know, that I'm totally defined with. I really don't know. Maybe I would, but I doubt it. But it's more about accepting that and living with that as part of it. And there comes this peace and this appreciation for life in the way that, hell, it hasn't come yet. You know, what are the odds? Yet? I have this quote that is one of my favorite quotes by Charles Bukowski, a writer. He says, "We are here to laugh at the odds and live our lives so well that death will tremble to take us," you know?
So I have had the experience of being present at my grandmother's death, at my sister's death, but also of being present at the birth of my niece and my two youngest grandchildren. And I'm of the opinion, Giselle, that birth and death are really quite similar. The drama, if you will, the drama of somebody actually coming to the new place and the drama of somebody leaving. And yet, as you're talking about, we mourn death. We think there's something negative about it, and yet we celebrate birth. And I like the story that you're talking about with a culture that celebrates death as well. That sounds good.
It does, and it's interesting you mentioned that because part of my work that I do is a death doula. Now, a doula is known mainly for birth, and it's somebody who supports emotionally, spiritually, and physically, you know, the woman during labor and then postpartum for a while as well. And I actually trained and did some work as a birth doula. And it's anything you say about how to be with the person, how to help them, how to help the family members around, you know, it's you're right. It's exactly like, you know, you do it at the end of life, you know. Mm-hmm. So I felt my power was more useful and needed at the other end of the line, so to speak. So then I do what's called a death doula, you know. And there's more and more people doing that out there, and which is fascinating because they're also training others, you know, just to be able to be present, you know, and support either the family or the person that's dying. Because a lot of times the person that is dying is, you know, can be unconscious or even like with a sudden unexpected death, you know, it's usually the family as well that needs the support and the attention. So, you know, how do we deal with that when it's about that? And what you said as far as the celebration being so honest with death and clear about it. I mean, there is a sadness because, you know, something that you love is not there anymore. You know, and that is sad, and that's something to grieve. But there's also this, you know, like, if your child moves away to school, I mean, it's not the same thing, but there's a loss there and there's a grieving as well. But, you know, we see it for what it is. And if we can have that awareness about death as well, I feel like it will be part more of our lives again and allow us to be fuller, you know, live our lives fuller. Yeah.
Well, in the early part of the 20th century, being around death was fairly commonplace. People laid out and prepared dead for burial on the dining room table, for goodness sake. And I also was thinking that death was more present because we didn't have the medical advances that now pull us back and we live longer lives. The average age at time of death, I think, in the early part of the 20th century was in the late 40s. Now we're up to 75, 80 average length of life. So what I'm sure you must have done research. What put the lid on death? Well, just a little over a century, we've put the lid on.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the institutionalizing of death, you know. And again, it's the same thing that's happened. It's happened to birth, you know. It's crazy to think you can birth and, you know, die in the home, and that's where it used to be. It's part of the home. And now it's been taken into the institutions, and because of this advancement that you're talking about, it's almost like, oh, no, we're finding a way to be immortal, and it's all in the doctor's hands. So it's looked upon as a failure or as, you know, it didn't, you know. And if you notice the language with death, it's very clear. Like, first of all, people rarely say died, or, you know, there's always we lost our friend. Where'd you lose him? You didn't lose him. You know, he died. You know what I mean? Or lost the battle with cancer, or you know. And that's one of the lines in the show. It's like I don't like to fight. You know, as death, I always win. It's not even an issue. So if we look at it in a different way, but I think that is kind of what's changed it, like all the medicine, all the treatments, that death is all of a sudden the enemy and the one to beat, the one to fight to the end. And And you can't beat it. You never will, ever. I mean, maybe in a gazillion years we would learn how to become immortal or something like that. That's how anything's possible. I do believe that. But right now it's a very real thing, you know, unavoidable.
Mm-hmm. Listen, we're up to our first break. I'm talking today with Giselle Suarez, who is an actress, playwright, and death doula. And you're going to hear some of the catchy and surprising things that Giselle has to tell you about death next when we return from these messages here on Full Power Living. How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Next week, Diane Morris Jones and I will discuss her Stop, Breathe, Believe method for revolutionary stress management. She's author of the book Stop, Breathe, and Believe and offers a really effective way of dealing with stress so that it doesn't take over our lives or our health. So be sure to listen next Thursday, September 18th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. I really think you're going to learn a lot. I've shared this method that she's teaching in my family, and it's been very effective, so I'm sure you'll want to listen to it. Also, you can sign up at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list. Then I can share with you details of our upcoming shows, and I'm also involved in a lot of projects, which I'll be telling you about too. When you listen to this show, which has been pre-recorded, I will be offering a presentation on life skills for children at an international parenting conference in Dublin, Ireland. So I'm sure you'll want to hear about some of those things that I'm fortunate enough to be able to do and talk with you about. My guest today is death doula Giselle Suarez. Giselle is author and performer of The Death Monologues. And before we dive into questions again, Giselle, you recently returned from performing the Death Monologues at the 18th Annual, which is the 2014 New York City International Theater Festival. So tell us why that's important to you. What happened, and where has it been helpful to you? What's opened up as a result of you taking your work to New York?
Well, it was fascinating to be there, and a dream come true. Since I was a child, I always wanted to be in the theater in New York, so that was really exciting. And the interesting thing about it is that when you're in New York, you know, there's theater everywhere all the time, and it was a very different crowd that came to see it. So it was very important for this piece to first of all, to get the message out there to, you know, an international audience and see how it's received when people are going, not necessarily, you know, for the message of the, but to see a good piece of theater. So, and and the title itself, it's either you're going to, no way you're going to go to that, or yes, you're going to go to that, you know, and that was, we talked about maybe not calling it what it is, but hey, we hope this will do for the death monologues what the vagina monologues did for the vagina, so we kind of like call it for what it is. So, but yeah, I had to look at some things that didn't work as well, and really, you know, I came back with really having to go deeper and more authentic into the personal stories. And one of the monologues is Persephone's story, and because Persephone is, you know, she's got a great story about you know, death and the underworld. And I thought it was important. She was a huge inspiration in writing this. I thought it was important to bring her story from a different perspective, you know, and share that. But I realized in the context of the other stories, which are very personal, real stories about death, she kind of wasn't as strong. Like, people didn't connect to that as much. So that's something that will probably come out and a new one will come in. So these kinds of things where I didn't expect it, like, I thought this is done and it's ready to go out into the world. You know, New York really made it clear, like, okay, no, I think like any creative you know, project, it's always evolving and changing, and, you know, according to how you change and the life changes. So it's sort of back to the drawing board, but, you know, minor changes. And then I'm going to start taking it on tour, and starting in I'm in Arizona, so we're going to start, like, you know, in the States, and then, you know, take it out to where we can take it out, you know, where people, somebody saw it that was from San Francisco, and they're involved in the death community there, and a school as well. So they want to, you know, this would be great to show at schools, also like medical schools, because it engages in a way that, you know, if whether you buy it or not, you're going to think about it at least. It's going to change the way you look at death. Somehow, even if you don't accept the premise of it, it will, like, rewire something. You know, it did for me, and so far it has for everybody that I've talked to that has seen it. You know, even those that have nothing, you know, that haven't been touched by death yet. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, I never thought about it that way. Of course, those who have, you know, it hits a nerve for sure. But those who haven't, they're like, well, I'll go check the show out because my friend told me to come see it. So, and it's like, wow, I never thought about it that way. So, you know, it's, it's interesting. It's interesting where it's going to go.
So now, when you set up the tour, our listeners would be able to find out where you're going to be performing by going on deathmonologues.com. You'll put that up.
Yes.
All right. Yeah.
Also, yes, I will. I'll be putting up all the dates and everything like that. And also for the listeners, if you have, you know, if you're interested in bringing this to your area, you know, to get in touch with me that way as well, because I would love to. You know, that's how we're going to set up the tour, is where we're called to go, and then, you know, set it up that way. Mm-hmm. So we got a few pinpoints that we started with, and then after that, it's pretty open. So.
All right.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I learned many years ago is a concept called facing fact, where you look squarely at what something is. And the message when I learned it was that facing fact sets you free. And when you talk about the death monologues and what looking at death does, you talk about freedom. And it seems that that's part of your gift to the world through this project, is that you are helping people to get free of their many, many concerns about death by looking at it squarely. Do you have any comment on that?
Yes, it's very much what the play is, and and it's the only way I could do this message. And it wasn't even like, because I had stopped acting for a while when I moved back to the States after my mom died, and I became a shaman practitioner and that kind of thing. But it sort of brought me to this, and I really felt like, you know, there was the energy of death, and for me it was the male thing, and it was courting me and showing me something. And what came out that, you know, I say on that stage is in no way anything I ever felt or believed about death. But it's because I was taken on that ride, and I felt so loved and supported and protected by death as it was showing me these things. And there's crazy stories that I encountered as I was writing this. And I was like, why am I going through this? I'm like, oh, because that's going to go into the monologues, you know. It's going to make it even that more real. And there's, you know, there's, that's the only way that I, those words can come out of my mouth or first on that paper. Things like, you know, your death, I love you, you know, I love you unconditionally. I know you better than you know yourself. And so the best is saved for last, you know. So this whole idea of death being impersonated, and really, like, I'm not here to make your life miserable and make you suffer and ruin everything that you think is precious. I'm here to love you and to hold you and to court you to your final destiny, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you can, there is a sense of freedom that comes from that. My lover is death, you know, it's no longer my enemy or something that I have to ignore, yet its presence is felt everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a sense of freedom and relief and willing and witnessing that as well as death is dancing with others in the world.
Mm-hmm. That was really important with my sister's death. My sister had ovarian cancer, and she was very aware of dying. She also was a theater person, and 7 weeks before she died, she did a one-hour play two nights in a row to standing ovation.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, about her journey?
Yes, she called it The Last Dance and billed herself as the cancer dancer. And she talked about her relationship with being on the stage. And from early on, she and I were my father's children from his first marriage. And when he took us away from our birth mother and then remarried, they had a very archaic belief that we would somehow develop all the negative characteristics of our birth mother if we were allowed to do drama or dance or music. And so we were not allowed to. And curiously enough, my sister became a dancer and drama performance coach, right? That's what she did in her life. And so she talked about that, and then she talked about the many experiences she had in dancing. And then she totally disrobed and showed everybody her body. And she looked like a victim from Auschwitz by that point. And she talked about what cancer had done to her dancer's body. And then she did something that was so powerful. Totally naked, she walked up and looked people in the eye in the audience. And she said, "Don't you make me into an object. I'm still in here."
My goodness.
So powerful. So powerful. So being with her as she was going through the process was just amazing, because she wouldn't take any medication. She didn't take hospice's cocktail until 24 hours before she died. And she called us to her. Her friend and I were looking after her. And she said, "I'm not, you know, don't ask me if I'm cold or I need anything or whatever. You are now in charge of my body," which was really important because she was a very controlling person, you know.
Right.
And she said, "You can start giving me the medication now." And we talked a little bit about how she was working to turn loose of the earth. And she went 24 hours later.
Wow. Wow, what a story. That's amazing.
Yeah. And being there with that death was beautiful. That you wouldn't think, but it was beautiful. It was so pure, it was so simple. That's what the beauty was.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing, like that's part of what I plan with the monologues. Is we have we show the show, and then we have not a workshop, because it's not the right word for it, more like a conversation where people can share these stories. because it's quite, and that it wasn't possible at the Fringe Festival. It was like one show after the other, and, you know, you have to come in, do your show, the next one's coming in right after. So there was no time for dialogue or conversation after, but it does bring stuff up where people want to tell their story, or, you know, somebody's mother died in exactly the same way my mother's died, and so hearing that story brought a lot of things up, and they want to talk about it, and, you know, so that's part of it too. Mm-hmm. What I was shown because of this work that I do is I was blessed with witnessing my mom's death and learning so much from that, but not every death is like that, and that's the whole thing, that there are no good deaths, there are no bad deaths, there's just your death, which is simple and perfect, you know, for what it is. So I got into hospice volunteer, and I was, you know, at the bedside for several people who were dying, and I was shown, it was like, okay, if you're going to make this show, you're going to take this on to the world, you need to get a taste of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the happy, peaceful death where you're surrounded by love, but, like, you know, the death where it's fearful and there's so much pain and resistance and the whole family is, you know, hating each other and fighting, and to be the witness there and you know, not judging and not saying, or no, I can't look at it this way. Like, no, this is another face of death. This is also very real, and it's not because it's wrong or the people are bad. It's just like, this is how it shows up as well. I was doing some work in Sedona as a reader, and this woman with her best friend, her daughter's best friend, came to see me. And now I do readings, and I'm not a medium, but for this period of my, I was like, this gift opened up, and I became the reader at the store. And as soon as I had the experiences that I needed to get deeper into the material that I wrote, it's like that door shut.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I wasn't getting anything. And so I'm like, if people ask for a medium, I can't do it anymore. It's not coming, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this one time, this woman, her daughter had been murdered at college in Chicago. I mean, brutally murdered and burned. I mean, like, awful. And her best friend, it was the year anniversary when this happened. So her mother and her best friend came to Sedona to do some healing. And we start having this talk, just the three of us in this room. And all of a sudden, I felt her come through. And what had happened with her death, it was such a horrible thing that nobody wanted to look at it. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to even look at the mother because of the pain that, you know, and she felt so alone. She felt so alienated. And the only place her death was discussed was in the courtroom. And there it's filled with hate, filled with anger, filled with, you know, nastiness. And I felt her spirit come through so strongly, and I guarantee you there's no way in the world I would have had the guts to tell this grieving mother this if I wasn't 110% sure it was her coming through.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, Mom, look at my death. You have to look at it. You have to talk about it with Lo, who is my best friend. You know, you're the two people I love most. And you have to talk about it together. It took me 4 hours, and I had that time, luckily, to get them to talk about what actually happened. Every time I talked about it, there was other things that came in. And I'm like, she's asking, and then for her to talk about what happened, you know. And I'm like, I don't really want to hear this, but I'm the vessel here, so I have to do it. Mm-hmm. And it was the weirdest thing, Irene. Like, as soon as they start talking about the mom explaining what happened, you know, it just felt the spirit needed her to look at it, to talk about it in this way, you know, without all the stuff around it. And like, Mom, this is my dance with death. This is how I exited my life, you know. It's okay to look at it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as she starts talking about it, like, the lights in the room start flickering and half of them, like, explode, like, just go and go out.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, my God, like a Hollywood movie or something. And she's like, I'm really scared right now. I'm like, it's just energy. The energy's changing, you know, light, electricity's energy. It's okay. There's nothing to be scared of. And I'm like, inside, I'm like, I'm scared shitless, dude. but, you know, I was like, and that stuck with me for a long time. I mean, a really long time. And they can't, I thought maybe I overstepped it, you know, and I shouldn't have. And I didn't hear from them anymore after that, so I thought, oh, gosh, you know, I hope it's all right. And a year later, they came back to visit me, thanking me for that. Like, how that changed everything for them. And it changed it for, I could feel it for her, the spirit. It was like, okay, my death has been acknowledged. It's been looked at. It's been honored. It's been witnessed. And now I'm free of that, you know, and I'm free to, you know, that was the end. It's like walking out at the end of the most amazing movie. You walk out because you can't bear to see the end. It's like, mm-hmm. what, all leading to this point, you know?
Right. Okay. Wow, that's a powerful story. We're up to our second break. Giselle Suarez is talking with me about death today. She's the author of The Death Monologues. You can find out more about her and the Death Monologues at deathmonologues.com. And what does our death doula have to say about how we've been reacting to the deaths of Michael Brown and Robin Williams? I'm asking her next on Full Power Living. We'll be right back. Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. Giselle Suarez is my guest today. And we're talking about death and the death monologues. So, Giselle, this week I've found myself getting into discussions with people about suicide. In this culture, as I'm sure you're aware, we believe that suicide is wrong and should be totally prevented. And I'm wondering, as you've looked at death, if you have developed an opinion about people taking their own lives.
I think so. I don't know if it's an opinion. I don't say anything about suicide in the sense like that's wrong or that's right. For me, it's like that's another way that death shows up. So my work is really looking at each death as a unique and perfect ending. That doesn't mean that advocating suicide or advocating murder or all those ways that death does show up. It's just looking at that one moment and stripping everything away for that one moment that you look at it and you honor how that person's story ended, no matter how it ended. And then being true with that, honoring that, witnessing that without having judgment about it, that's what's essential, I believe. And that's what, you know, I'm doing as a death doula, you know, when I'm in these places around death so much. It's like it's okay. That moment, it's perfect. Now, what comes before or after that, you know, like, you know, it's helping people who are depressed or, you know, what's happening, you know, with the law and all that. And that's different. That's going to happen. And I don't have opinions about what's right or wrong with that. I mean, I do, but that's not important to share. It's more about that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not saying suicide is right or wrong. I'm just saying that death is what happened, and that's perfect in itself. Mm-hmm. You know, it couldn't. Yeah. So I guess that's all I have to say about that. And
all right.
You know, death has the closing monologue. It's like how you're really feeling how much death loves you by this point, and it's like I can show up as the suicide, or the execution, or the heart attack, or the car accident, you know? It's like, I come in many forms, and you can't avoid it, you know? But yeah, it's not really making a statement about that, just about the suicide, but it's honoring that death in itself. And it's hard for people to do that, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it's like, oh, it could have been prevented, you know.
Well,
and you can't.
I think that how you react to something like that, at least this is what I've been thinking about recently, how you react to something
mm-hmm.
like that depends on your view of what's happening when you have a life here on the earth. So, for example, if you believe that this life is the most important thing, then people seem to fight to maintain life here at all costs. But if you view the earth as more of a phase or an interval in the development of a soul, people seem to accept the end of life or leaving life on the earth more
mm-hmm.
easily. And I think it seems like as a culture that we have been hanging on to the idea that this is the most important thing, to have life on earth.
Yeah, and I don't make any comments about that as well, or have any thoughts about that. My opinion, my feelings about it is that we don't really know, you know. And what I do say is that we know that this comes to an end, and whether there's an afterlife or, you know, whatever or not, is it might help people deal with, you know, death and accepting it. But the point is, it is the end of this one, so
mm-hmm.
that's very real as well. And for me, it's like, I don't know. I'll see. I hope there is, but I don't know for sure. So all I can do is what's real for now, and accepting death from that premise that we don't really know, or maybe some have an afterlife, maybe some don't. You know, like, just there's many different lifestyles in
right.
life, and maybe it's that way in death too. Maybe some people just don't go on, and some others do. I don't know. But it's more about appreciating this life and looking at death as very much a part of it, you know,
mm-hmm.
To allow us to appreciate it and realize when it's time to go, you know,
mm-hmm.
for all of us. And for those you love and for those you don't know but hear about. And, you know, death can inspire, you know, certain things, like, you know, now all this stuff that it's doing for depression, and people are talking about it more, and suicide and all that. That's still happening in life, though, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that as death in one of the moments in the play. I said the meaning of your death lies in those who continue to live. So if your death is looked upon as something horrible, as something, you know, that could have been avoided, and that's what is left behind, I think that's very sad. And I look at every death as beautiful and perfect. And I had to go through that. Like, if my son was brutally murdered, could I still say that? And I yes. Doesn't mean I won't grieve, and I won't maybe even kill myself as a result of it. I don't know. But I'm saying that moment is like, yes, every death is perfect and unique in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
And so honoring that and looking at that, for those who have died, brings a very positive, very powerful energy to that person's life. If we all look at Robin Williams' end as a horrible thing, as something that could have been prevented, that, you know, what a loss. I mean, it is a loss, but, or if we look at it, yes, all that is part of it, but let's just look at the beautiful ending of his story and how perfect that was, and all its tragedy and all its, you know, misery and pain, and honor that for what it is, you know, rather than looking at it as a mistake, because the truth is we're all going to die, and how we all die is how we die, you know, and suicide is a way to die, you know.
Right. I had a brilliant, to me, insight about that regarding Robin Williams, and that is, and I wasn't on anything, I just heard that laugh, green tea, maybe. The idea, I first saw Robin Williams on the stage when he was 18. He was in a play in Marin County, California, right above San Francisco. He was going to the College of Marin, and my friend and neighbor was the head of the drama department there. So I went to see this play. It was in a little theater. I don't think they had more than 100 people there. And the play was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And
mm-hmm.
Robin Williams played the part of Snoopy. And he brought the house down at 18 because he was just an outrageous Snoopy. He was a total Snoopy. And I have a little puppy now, and I find myself singing, sup, sup, supper, you know, which is what Robin Williams was singing in that play. So the idea I had was that Robin Williams was one of the hallmarks of what he did was that he was outrageous.
Yeah.
Absolutely outrageous. And he took us away because he did the outrageous things. He said the outrageous things. And guess what? Committing suicide was also outrageous.
Yes.
So he was still in character.
Right, right. Yeah. The perfect ending to a perfect story. That's, you know, it's that's how each death is. It can be, you know, if we allow it to look at it that way.
Uh-huh.
There's this, he's an artist. He's dead now, but Herman Brood, a Dutchman, he's an amazing musician and artist. And he lived a life, like, on the edge. I mean, he openly did drugs all the time. And then I think he was in his mid-50s, his body started to deteriorate, you know, and he's like, there's no way that I'm going to go down this journey because he's not going to stop the drugs and, you know, and he just doesn't want to go down this journey. So he went to the highest building in Amsterdam, which is the Hilton Hotel, and he jumped and he killed himself that way. And, you know, it was tragic, but the country was celebrating his death. And you know how they celebrate? It was very funny. His last name is Brood, which means bread in Dutch. So they put, like, piles of loaves of bread at the foot where he jumped, you know. And it was the perfect, yeah, it was a suicide. But it was the perfect ending to a story, and people could appreciate that, you know. It wasn't like, oh, he should have done something different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's honoring that, you know, and especially with suicide because it feels... it's very personal, you know, the meaning of your death lies in those who continue to live, and nothing is more truer when it shows up as suicide, you know?
Yeah, well, we certainly seem to have a reaction to death that we deem is premature. You know, the Michael Brown's death was premature because he's a teenager. He should have had a long life. And Robin Williams was only 63, and he did so many wonderful things for people. We, I'm sure, see it as premature, and we don't like that. And I understand, because we like to have the joy of being with those people for longer. But I like your point of view of, you know, it's an experience, and this person is born that way, and that person's born that way, and this person dies this way, and that person dies that way. I like that way of looking at things.
Yeah, it makes it allows us to relax about it, knowing that, you know, it's already there, so don't worry about it, but keep it close, because it keeps you, you know, appreciating what you do have when you have it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no guarantees, you know. That's something Death says. There are no rules. It doesn't mean that you get to live to 75 if you're, you know, eating healthy and right. You know, and my journey into death, as I was writing this, I was witnessing it and exploring it and researching it. You know, children dying. I mean, that is so tragic. Mm-hmm. But it happens all the time. You know, sudden deaths, brain tumors, and, you know, 30-year-olds out of the blue and dead in a year. You know, all these kinds of things. It has no one way of showing up. Now, just because the majority, which I even might argue that it's the majority, you know, die of old age or at a certain age, doesn't mean that the other ones are wrong or premature, you know. It's like you're saying, it's every death is already woven into your life, so, and it's your perfect ending to your perfect story, you know. Again, like the movie, you know, the end of the movie is already there. When you go into the movie, you know it's going to end, and it's very similar for life, you know. It's already there. It's already written or however, and then, you know, enjoying each moment till the end.
You remind me of an experience I had, which I would like to tell you briefly. I had a woman, she was a mentor of mine. She was very important to me. She started mentoring me when I was 20 and helped me to grow up. Her name was Norma, and she was an instructor at the School of Social Work at the University of Washington in Seattle. And she was a brilliant woman. She spoke several languages, and she played violin in the Seattle Symphony, and she mentored people all over the world. And I could not believe it when her son-in-law called me one day and told me she was dead. She had developed lung cancer, didn't tell anybody about it, had her diseased lung removed, and she was doing fine in about 5 days after she was still in the hospital, and she took a sudden turn for the worse and died.
Wow.
And as soon as he told me and I hung up the phone, I collapsed on my kitchen floor. I was just crying, and I was sobbing, and I heard Norma's voice in my head. And she said, what are you doing, Eileen? And I said, I'm crying. And she said, what about? I said, about you. You're dead. You're gone. And she said, you're not crying about, and she was like this in life too, you're not crying about me. You're crying for what you've lost. Right? And I went, really? But you're gone, and I'm never going to see you again. I'm never going to talk to you again. And she said, so? And I said, well, I've lost you. You know, you're not going to be there. And you mean so much to me. You've helped me so much. And she said, if I've really helped you, and if I've really meant something to you, get up and stop crying and go pass it on.
That's awesome. That's really awesome.
Yeah. And so that was a big piece of learning for me. Well, thank you. This whole area, I mean, you've got some guts, girl, and some strength to take this topic on.
I know. I didn't have a choice, really. It was like happening through me, and I couldn't stop it. And I tried. I really tried. and it's happening, and it's not easy. But I'll tell you, when I'm on that stage and connecting with people, it's a very intimate show, you know, so I can do that. I can go up to them and touch them, you know, and I look them in the eye like your sister did, you know. It's like the rest of the world falls away, and it is the most magical moment. And for everybody, it's like you're here. Everything in your life has happened to get you in that chair right now. You know what I mean? And that's very special. So the rest is just like, well, you know, if at some point I stop doing it, I stop doing it. But right now I'm doing it. So
I really appreciate you helping us to look at death and experience death in these different ways, and for creating the Death Monologues. I want to remind our listeners that your website is deathmonologues.com. And thank you so much for insisting that you come on to Full Power Living.
Thank you so much for having me.
Go ahead.
No, I'm really grateful for this. Thank you that's what's persisting for me to write this. I was persisting for you to get me on your show.
Right. It's wonderful. Well, it's quite a crusade, and I want to thank you for launching the crusade, for listening to What You Couldn't Get Away From, and also thanks for being here on Full Power Living today.
You're welcome. Can I share one last piece?
Sure.
Okay, this I just want to leave you all, because this was a huge gift. This was one of the miracles that happened with my mom's death. So I was very confused, and I went home to look for a picture of us. And my grandmother, who had died also of a brain aneurysm, my mom died of a brain tumor, I found this loose calendar page in my mother's desk with my grandmother's handwriting all over it. My grandma was very spiritual and aware, and it was dated December 2nd, 1967. I have no idea why she wrote this, to who she wrote this, but I found it, and I read it to my mother like a few days before she died. It was amazing. And this is what it said. I just want to share this because I think it's such a gift. It says, from the deepest part of my heart, I wish you peace. That God grant you the infinite grace to find your own truth so that you can enjoy the calmness of spirit that can only be obtained from the inside out by means of a simple rule that is not written in any book. Do not be eager in searching for it. Find it with that divine light that you carry in your soul, that divine treasure of being humble, of being generous, and of being love. The only truth, the only religion, only love, and the only way to always be prepared to depart.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that, and thank you to your grandmother also. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It seems like we could talk a long time. This has been a very special show, and thank you again for being with us, and keep us posted on what you're doing, okay?
I'd love to. All right. Thank you, Eileen.
Mm-hmm. So next week, join me for my conversation with Diana Morris-Jones about revolutionary stress management, the Stop, Breathe, Believe method. And be sure to listen on Thursday, September 18th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, our producer. Thank you very much, Paul, for now. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.